We have no fear of someone who loves us so perfectly. His perfect love for us eliminates all dread of what he might do to us. If we're afraid, it is for fear of what he might do to us and shows us that we're not fully convinced that he really loves us.
Welcome to the Search in Your City podcast. I'm your host, Blaine Larson, and today, this is week three of a four-week series on fear with my guest, Dr. Joel Householder. This week, we're going to cover a big topic, the fear of God. And Joel, these have been just interesting, fascinating conversations that you've invited us into. And for those who may have missed, can you give us a 60-second recap of the first two episodes, and then let's dive into this concept of the fear of God?
Well, thank you, Blaine. Always great to be back and talking about such important things. So thanks for the privilege. Yeah, it's an interesting time in our history, personal and country, or the world history, actually, with this coronavirus. So it conjures up ideas, I think, about crises and fear. And certainly we've had plenty of these in our history, and plenty of us have had personal crises that have come our way. So we have to begin addressing this uncertainty and this confusion and chaos that becomes anxiousness and worry and fear. And so we have to ask, how in the world are we going to overcome the fear and anxiety and the worries, these things that we feel when crises come our way? And so for the last couple of weeks, we've simply talked about the idea that the way we combat fear in life is we become courageous. And that asks another question, is what is your courage based upon? In other words, what do you believe? What are you convicted about? The warrior goes to war to fight because he's convicted about the love of his country, and he surrenders himself to it. Well, the Christian would say, because of the love of God in my life, it gives me the conviction, my faith does, to inform my courage to overwhelm the fears that I might say. So this is what we've been talking about, just this idea of courage and faith and fear.
Yeah, and that's a great summary that leads us into our topic today. And the illustration that came to mind was, if you think of a forest, right? You think of maybe a bunch of pine trees. I'm from the Northwest, so pine trees. And then you think about, what if there's a forest? That's all you can see, regular old pine trees. And then there's a big, huge redwood towering over them all. And this redwood is really the big fear in the midst of all of the pine trees of normal average fears. And I think that's what we're talking about today, Joel, this idea of the fear of God. It's the big one. And I know you and I both felt this as we were thinking through what are we going to talk about today, that this is such a big, massive, complex topic. It's hard to even know where to begin, but that's why you're our expert. So I'm going to ask you, Joel, where do we start with this?
Listen, I'm an expert in many things, but this is a complicated subject. I'll do the best I can to give my thinking about this idea, but you're right. I don't think we can. It's easy to talk about phobias and the things that we fear, like snakes and spiders and failure and future. Those kinds of things are always upon us. But this is a big one that casts a shadow, I think, on all the other fears, this idea of the fear of God. And generally, we ignore it or just don't talk about it. Or maybe it's so complicated we don't know what to say. So let's dive in here to that. I think a great way to enter into this subject would be to give it an illustration that, based upon this idea that we often fear what or whom we don't know. In other words, we've heard sound bites about God, but we don't really know him, so maybe we have a mistaken identity. Maybe we put him in a box and we haven't allowed him out, and we keep him there. And it reminds me that we do this all the time in life. I remember when I was in high school, we had there was a guy named Hewlin. Hewlin was the star of our rival high school. He was the star of their football team. And he had a neck like a fire hydrant, man. This guy was built, body made by the armored tank division. He was a bruiser. And so it's easy when you see the star of a rival football team to put him into a box and he becomes the enemy and you peg him. And it's easy to leave a guy like that pegged because he's easy now to destroy. You see, we can build him up and talk about him. And so I had him pegged in a nice, tightly knit box. He was arrogant and a tough and a brawler. And we feared him, by the way, because we didn't really know him. So when you get around him, you'd stay away from him. Until one time we were put together at a Young Life camp when we were both in high school. And what's interesting was everything I thought about this guy, Hewlin, was not real. He was friendly and outgoing and funny. And guess what? We became friends. I had to take him out of the box. And the question I think we have about God is have we put him in a box, see? Are we afraid of him because we don't know him? Kind of a foundational idea as we kind of get into this whole idea of God. We have a tendency to have sound bites about God, and we want him to be our miracle God. We want him to be our deal maker, our virus killer. We want him to make our dreams come true. And so we write a script when we're younger. About the way we want life to become. And when it doesn't happen, you see, and God has allowed that somehow, we get disappointed with God. So, because he didn't meet our expectations, this God in the box. So he must not exist, or maybe even worse, we dismiss him. We're kind of indifferent toward him. So I wonder the question we're asking is, should we fear this guy, or should we be afraid of him?
Well, that's the question. Those are the questions. So where do we go?
Yeah. Well, I think they're two different questions, and I think ultimately the answer is going to depend upon if you know him. And so I thought it'd be just interesting because I love the story of the Bible. It gives us a picture of God that we can warm to. Why? Because God's relational. And I love starting at the beginning where it says in Genesis 1:1, in the beginning, God created. So he's the creator of the universe. And I like to ask sometimes, do we know how big the Milky Way galaxy is? Do you know how big the Milky Way galaxy is?
No earthly clue.
Okay. Most people don't. If you could travel at the speed of light, 186,000 miles per second, and think about that, can't get your head around that, it would take you a second and a half to travel to the moon. It'd take you 8 minutes to travel to the sun. But if you started on one side of the Milky Way and traveled all the way across the Milky Way, of which our solar system is a part, it would take you 100,000 light years. That's just one galaxy amongst billions. Scientists don't know how many they are. They're trillions. How big could God possibly be? But it means when you begin to consider this, that God is really powerful and really to be feared. He deserves to be feared in a way because of his majesty and bigness, but not to be afraid of. That's where the story of the Bible begins to inform us. See, we got to take God out of the box and ask, does he want us afraid of him or to fear him, which we're going to define in just a moment. So that's how I see the story begin. And when you look into Genesis 1 and 2, what you begin to discover is that the preeminent desire of God and his creation is relational. He gave us longings in our heart, and I've discovered at least 10 of these, but the idea of the longings and desires is if we will pursue how God wired us to long, if we will pursue the object of those intents, we will live satisfied lives. God, the preeminent longing is for intimacy with Him and with each other.
Yeah, and I think so many people hear this phrase, the fear of God, and the way that it's used so often, just in regular usage in our culture, right, is it's a very negative thing, right? It's I'm going to put the fear of God in you, son. And it's got this punishment, anger kind of side to it. And so when you say that we should fear God and that He wants a relationship with us, though, and He longs to be intimate, I'm just really curious to hear how all this unfolds, because I think those are almost two different concepts that are out there. So just a little inside info there.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And part of the complication of language is that we interpret in English, we can have words like fear, which could be many different words in a different language. But it's like talking about love. You know, we love our cars, we love biscuits dipped in gravy, we love our dogs, and we also love our wives. Somewhere the nuances of those kind of things get lost in the language. What do you mean you love a dog like you love your wife? That doesn't make sense.
Don't say that on Valentine's Day to Cindy, by the way.
That wouldn't work, would it? Yeah. Yeah. I just think it's so compelling that God was a relational God. I think the whole story of the Bible is about His desire for us to be intimate with Him. He gives a great picture, by the way, in Genesis 2:24. This is before the fall, when He says, you know, for this cause, a man shall leave his father and mother, you know, cleave to another, and then become one. But there's a profound little clause that happens right after that, Blaine, which says they were naked and unashamed. And it's not that they were simply standing without clothes on and thought each other looked nice or whatever. It's something much deeper than that. It's a sense of they had nothing to hide, or a sense of authenticity or transparency. Nothing, listen to this, nothing now to fear with each other. Because why? You know me fully and you love me. This is the idea I think God is saying, this is what I want. I want to be intimate with my creation, and I'm going to make you in my image. And so part of this idea is how we see Him. Is He the creator of the universe that we fear? Because quite frankly, as you just mentioned in your thinking there are many Hebrew words that can be translated in the English fear. Matter of fact, there's some that talk about the fear of God being interpreted as being afraid. But you will notice in the Old Testament, all of these translations that say fear of God, that are talking about fear of being afraid, are exclusively used when confronting evil. But the predominant idea, as a matter of fact, used, I don't know, 300 times or more in the Old Testament, is this Hebrew word yare. It's used 150 times talking about fearing God. But the idea, as we're getting to here, is the idea of reverence and awe and respect and admiration. You see, this is when the scriptures say the fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. It's this sense of beginning with how we see God. Is He awesome and wonderful and powerful and majestic? Because that is to be feared. Not afraid, but it's to draw you into the presence of someone who is powerful. We stand in awe of that. I remember back in my young life days, I used to take a lot of kids backpacking. And it was wonderful when you'd get above tree line and you would camp out. And you'd you build your fire and you have some great time around the fire. Then you'd lay all your sleeping bags side by side on the tarp, and you would sleep outside under the stars. And there you saw, I think, the immanence of God, his wonder, his awe, his majesty, the expanse. As a matter of fact, sometimes it would leave you actually breathless. Because now you're confronting, you see, the beautiful wonder of who could create a galaxy that it takes 100,000 light years to travel across and yet create a solar system, a little cul-de-sac that we live in, that we can actually love, enjoy, and be kind and share. Why? Because we're made in his image. You see, there's something wonderful about this God who is so big but yet so involved. So engaged.
Yeah, it reminds me. It's a great illustration, and it reminds me of an event in my life. So make this maybe personal for everyone as well. So I think when you meet somebody that you look up to, or somebody who's a, for whatever reason, a quote unquote important person, right? You can have that sense of awe. You got the butterflies, you got the respect, and my wife will tell you, in my life, I'm generally not a person who gets nervous to meet anybody. I've been around all kinds of folks, but there was one person that I got to meet back a long time ago, Joel, and you know I used to be in the music business, and gosh, this is probably approaching 15 years ago, okay, but I got to meet George Strait, and if you don't know who that is, you can just go ahead and unsubscribe from this podcast. We don't want you as a listener.
Yes, that's right.
No, but he was my favorite musician, still is, and got to meet him. And she goes, Sammy goes, I've never seen you that nervous to meet anybody. And it was because of what he had accomplished and how I had looked up to him and the business I was in and so forth. And so I think all of us could think of somebody like that, right? There's somebody you'd meet and you just go, not because you're afraid of him or afraid he was going to do anything to me. I was excited to meet him, but there's this sense of wow. And you act different and you're making sure I'm not doing anything dumb and being very respectful and so forth. And is that some of the dynamic you're trying to get at with this idea?
Absolutely. Great illustration. We know what it's like to feel reverence or some admiration for people. But imagine multiplying that 1,000, 1,000,000 times in terms of the awesomeness of God. And part of the issue that we have in our culture, you know, is that we've lost the sense of that awesomeness. We're constantly in touch with what I call the second creation, buildings and cars and things that we create. And we don't ponder anymore the first creation of God. That's why you need to go backpacking in Colorado and sleep out under the stars, because it puts you back in touch with the majesty of God again. But here's the problem that happened in this story as it unfolds, and why we might have a fear of being afraid of God, okay? Because the question will be asked, should Christians be afraid of God? Or should anybody be afraid of God? I already told you that there are plenty of opportunities or examples in the Old Testament where God brought his afraidness to people because he was fighting evil. But in the story as it goes, Adam and Eve, back in chapter 3 now, they made a willful choice to not follow God. A choice to satisfy these longings we talked about, how God wired us to maybe do it a different way. And because of that, they broke the relationship. And what happened in Adam, which is what I think happens to me, I am Adam, and so are you. So is everybody. We all try to satisfy these longings in different ways. And what happened to Adam is he distanced from God and he went to hiding. Matter of fact, if you read the passage there, God came along and asked two big questions. He said, "Hey, fellows, Adam and Eve, where are you guys?" Like he didn't know, but he asked the question. And Adam pipes up, "I heard you in the garden," and this is what he said, Blaine, "I was afraid." Not reverential awe. I was afraid of you.
Afraid of what God would do to him, right?
I think there was a sense of that he had broken something. I think with the ultimate inclusion of the fall, when we said we'll do it our way, we became self-aware. We also became aware of something else, that breaking relationship with God or not revering him or fearing him has consequences. And we see these consequences happen in chapter 3, that sin or evil has consequences. And so the second question, by the way, that God asks is, he said, "I was afraid because I was naked." And God said, "Well, who told you?" In other words, the question that you and I have to answer too is, well, whose voice are you listening to tell you what will satisfy you? And this is the problem, I think, that happens when we get afraid of God. When we pull away from God, this is the best I can see it. When we pull away from God, we lose his protection, and we can actually become afraid of him. Because remember, we put him back in a box that we don't know him anymore. We've distanced from him.
Well, this to me, tell me if I'm right here, Joel, but this ties into a theme that we've been talking about through this whole series, which is faith. And faith is real simple. It just means to trust. You're talking about trusting God. And it seems to me like what you've got here is when faith is abandoned to some level, is what follows, a afraidness of God. And it also links back to that evil, that wrongdoing, because really any lack of trusting in God is not a good thing. And the outflow of that is this afraidness of afraidness of God, being scared. Is that a good conclusion, or am I on?
I think a lot of what you're saying is actually very true, because you can find verses like Hebrews 10:31, for instance, says it's a frightening thing to fall into the hands of a living God. And we know that Paul picks up on the same idea in Romans chapter 1, verse 18, where he says the wrath of God, this sense of anger, you see, that Adam got in touch with, this wrath of God is being revealed from heaven. Now listen to this, against all ungodliness, not just the ungodliness of the evil person that has no connection to God, but the ungodliness that Joel Householder brings into the world. So the question, you see, that we have to begin to deal with is, well, then, am I supposed to be afraid of God? And I need to start from the very get-go. When you start trying to think this out, we have to know that God has taken care of our afraidness. Matter of fact, the beautiful passage that the Apostle John writes toward the end of his life, In his first letter of John, as we call it, 1 John chapter 4, verse 18, says, "We have no fear of someone who loves us perfectly." In other words, God's not going to abandon us. We might pull away from him and begin to self-impose an afraidness, you see, because we have distanced from him. We don't really know, and maybe we're having to get in touch with the fact that we've offended a holy God. Matter of fact, some people, you know, when you talk about this idea of are we afraid of God, or should we be afraid of God, they call it a holy terror. Maybe there's something good about a holy terror. I think we say it a little bit differently in the New Testament. We talk about in Hebrews, it says, you know, the Lord disciplines those whom he loves. Well, that could be a sense of holy terror, that when you come against the authority and you've offended him, like we all can identify with a sense of what it means to be a father and a child, or a mother and a child, with the authority in their life. And in a sense, they revere us because we're bigger and stronger, you know, like George Strait was to you, you know.
Only he's smaller than me, but regardless.
Oh, let's talk about him. Anyway, the idea there is that there are times when we have to bring holy terror to our children. Why do we do that? There's no joy in punishing. or you know, that might have a bad connotation, but there's no joy in disciplining a child. But a coach disciplines you. He wants to make your muscles bigger. You know, he says, run, lift, do things. Well, we have the responsibility in life as fathers, you see, with the authority that we bring to help a child be disciplined. When our children would get out of control, you do everything you can to avoid any kind of difficult punishment or difficult discipline. But we would occasionally get to the point where disrespect was so prominent that we would have to use a wooden spoon. Yeah. And they euphemistically called it Mr. Ouch. And so all we'd have to do is actually pick up Mr. Ouch and everything would get really calm. You know what I mean? Why? Because no one likes to be disciplined, but there is a reason why we do it. And that is we're trying to restore and train our children in the way they should go. And maybe we get them in touch with the fact that actions have consequences. And I believe there's something healthy about the fact that God disciplines us too.
And isn't it true, though, that that's coming out of a place of love, even if it doesn't feel that? And the difference that we're talking about here is, for those who have trusted Christ, that discipline of God is not coming out of a angry, wrathful judgment side of him, if you will, which has been taken care of, but it's coming out of a love, just like you would with your child. You don't hate your child. You want what's best for them. You love them, so you discipline. Or is that right?
Perfect. Absolutely right on target. As a matter of fact, here's a good illustration. I hope. As I said a moment ago, I think sometimes we as the children of God. Remember, it says to those who received him, they become children of God. John chapter 1. Well, even children are rebellious, just like our own children. But we're also rebellious to God, and this is when we distance. You see, I had a friend of mine one time. His name was Bill. That's not his real name, but I'll call him Bill. Bill was in a group that I taught, and we had become very good friends. And we did couples dates and things with his wife and so forth. I got a call from his wife one time, and she was nervous, thinking maybe Bill was having an affair. So I called Bill, and we talked about it. And he said, no, that's, she's wrong. And 3 weeks later, she calls me in tears and said, it's true. And so I called him and said, hey, Bill, let's have lunch. And because of our friendship, he said, of course. And so we met, and we began to talk about this. Bill, you, what's going on? And so he confessed it. And I said, why would you lie to me? Why would you not tell me? Well, because when you run from God, you see, you run from everyone, and you hide, and you're not naked and ashamed anymore. You're clothed and shamed. And that's what we do when we run from God. We clothe ourselves, we protect ourselves, because we've run from his protection. So I said to him, Bill, how will you explain to God, who hates divorce, what you're doing? And here was his answer to me. He said, because God loves me and he will forgive me. And Blaine, are both of those true? Does God love you and will he forgive you?
That's true.
Of course. But you don't say that to the parent when you continually disobey what they're saying. You can't presume upon a good and loving God and say, I'm going to do life my own way. It's illogical. And so I pushed my chair away from the table when he told me that. And he said, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm afraid to be this close to someone who is mocking God. I was really, really bold with him. I don't usually come across that bold to people. But I knew him so well. And that's what the scriptures say. Don't be deceived. Do not be deceived. God cannot be mocked. And this comes from Galatians chapter 6. When we think about that, a man will reap what he sows, you see, and so will my friend Bill. So meeting the God of the Bible is not like meeting the Wizard of Oz. So some feckless created being. This is the God who created the universe. And we don't want to toy with that, you see. He's patient and kind and good with us in our sin. Yes, we all sin. But to do it recklessly and with abandonment, because we've come to this conclusion that God's my friend and he's my buddy and he loves me. We've lost, you see, in a way, in our current Christian culture, this idea of the immanence of God, his majesty and his holiness. And we got to put both of that package together. You don't want to mess with the Holy God, is what I would say.
And part of your, just what you've shared with your friend Bill, that story, Joel, is yes, of course it's true, God forgives. What's lost in the story is what makes that possible. Because God doesn't just wave a magic wand and go, I forget about it, or just it's all gone and I don't have to deal with it. It was incredibly costly for him to grant forgiveness and to just do away with that, and to be flippant with it is just not something that he wants. It doesn't make any sense. And so I think you've introduced there's a lot of tension points in what we've talked about here, right? We started off saying this is a difficult subject, the fear of God.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But help us to understand, how did God actually purchase this forgiveness, and what does it mean for us regarding our fear of God?
Yes. Well, it costs God a lot. Matter of fact, God's not going to coerce anyone into being in a relationship with him. It's the beauty, really, of what you saw with the prodigal son and the father. I know we don't have time to go through that whole story, but it's a beautiful depiction of a young person who said, I want to do it my way. And by the way, I need some cash if I'm going to leave town. If I'm going to do it my way, I want to sell my oats, I need some cash. It cost the father a lot. He had to go sell a piece of the property, which probably he had inherited and had been passed along. It was costly financially. But it cost him, you see, the emotional tug of letting go of a son. Imagine that, letting go and seeing your son depart from you. There's a lot of hurt, I think, and wounding that goes on when one of your creation kind of sticks his nose up in the air and says, I'm going to do it my way. And I think this is what the prodigal son did. What you find in a lot of life is that we have to come, you know, it said the prodigal son came to his senses after he was squandered all the money and was slopping with the pigs. And you have to ask in life, not only did he ask the question himself, but we ask in life, how's this working for you? How is this push away from God working? Is it fulfilling you? Is life good for you? Do you enjoy what's going on? You blessed? You feel good? And finally, this young man came to his senses and said, I've sinned against you. And you know how the story ends. It's a beautiful story told by Jesus saying, this is what God is like. And I'm getting to the answer, the ultimate answer that we're moving toward here in Jesus. But this is the nature of God. When it said the son came back, it said the father was looking to and fro. It almost as if he was at the window every day, looking back and forth, wondering if today was the day his son was going to return. This is the longing of God in his heart for his creation. And I love what happened when he saw his son return. He runs to him. He says he hugs him and kisses him. He was affectionate toward him, and he restored him. And this is the beauty of the restoration that God completes in his story in the Bible. Because it says he gave us his son. He let go of his son, you see, to do something magnanimous, to die for us. And this is such a beautiful, selfless thing that God would give himself up. Remember it says in Jesus, no one has seen the Father except the Son. He has explained him. Now we know God's out of the box, you see. We've got Jesus. We have no excuses to say we don't have an idea of what God is like. We know. And this is what God did when he brought what we now call the gospel, the good news, is that, yeah, we like Adam, have fallen astray. We've missed the mark with our sin problem, but God has gifted us with his son, and he gave us eternal life if we'll believe in him. That's kind of the idea of the gospel. Jesus came to overcome the penalty, the consequences of our sin. He came to overcome the power of our sin. We can live today without being a slave or addicted to our fears, you see, because we have Christ in us. That's in Romans 6. And then he said, I'm also going to give you my presence. I'm going to overcome your isolation, your aloneness with me. I'm going to live in you. This is such a powerful thing to know that a believer is indwelt by the God and has God with us at all times. And so all he asks us is to revere him, to fear him, to invite him into our life, to say thank you for what you've done in Jesus, and to believe in him. That's the word the New Testament uses, have faith or believe or trust. Just like you do a surgeon, you know, you can think a surgeon is great and all-powerful and skillful, and until you lie on the table and say, cut me open, that's the trust that Jesus is talking about. Will you trust me enough to say, help me? And that's what happens when we say yes to Jesus, come into our lives and help us along the way. I no longer have to be afraid of God. Perfect love casts out fear, and God loves us perfectly.
And one of these key concepts, I think, in what you're saying, Joel, related to the gospel, this good news, this idea that, like you said, perfect love casts out fear, is this concept that with what Jesus accomplished on the cross through his resurrection, all of God's wrath was completely satisfied.
Yes.
And it's an amazing concept that I don't know is, maybe it's not out there, or at least I don't hear it quite as much, but I don't know what's more relevant to this idea of fear. Because there is this sense in which we've talked about being afraid of God follows a lack of faith, it follows evil, and you know what? We're all guilty of that to various degrees, but we're all guilty. And there's a fear, and you know what? The Bible does talk about judgment from God, and it talks a lot about the wrath of God.
That's right.
But you know what the story of it is? I love how you started it. That stuff's all over the Bible. The story is God fixing it. The story is God with us. And the story is all of that, all of God's anger and wrath is fully satisfied in what Jesus did. And so for somebody who trusts and believes, that's a great comfort. That's one of that is one of those things that breeds the positive side of the fear of God for us, right? We stand in awe of God because he's taken away the penalty of ultimate judgment.
It's a response, isn't it? As a matter of fact, it's a great motivation to be good, not because we have to, because we get to. I don't you love the passage? I'm just affirming you in what you just said. It's in Romans 8:1 where it says, there's no condemnation now for those who are in Christ Jesus. We've been set free. And I think this is what John was picking up in chapter 4 of 1 John, when he said we have no fear of someone who loves us so perfectly. His perfect love for us eliminates all dread of what he might do to us. If we're afraid, it is for fear of what he might do to us, and shows us that we're not fully convinced that he really loves us. You know the point of that? There are lots of believers who've kept God so small in their life, they still fear him. He's still in the box, and they're not letting him out. And I would say, get a hold of the Bible. Go read the 400 passages on fear and see if it doesn't illuminate and enlighten you about the fact that you can be entirely safe with God. That's what he wants. you remember the story about Susan and the beaver in the Chronicles of Narnia?
I do.
It might be a good way to end this a little bit.
I think that'd be fantastic. It's classic.
Yeah. Susan, if you remember in the Chronicles of Narnia, Susan was a little girl and she meets the beaver, and the beaver's talking about this lion that was going to come to Narnia and save Narnia. And of course, Aslan, the lion, is the Christ figure in C.S. Lewis's imagery, his metaphors, his imagery. So here's how the conversation went. Susan and the beaver are talking, and the beaver says to Susan, "Aslan is a lion, the great lion." And Susan says, "Ooh, I thought he was a man. Is he quite safe? I shall feel rather nervous about meeting a lion," she says. And then Mr. Beaver pipes up, "Safe? Who said anything about being safe? Of course he isn't safe, but he's good. He's the king, I tell you. And don't we love the fact that we have a God who's moral, who will judge? We don't want it any other way. Jesus came, it says in John 1, in truth and grace. The truth is that we fall short. The grace is, I got you covered." And that's what he did for us on the cross. And I'm so grateful for that in my life and for all the people that have trusted him. And I can't wait to have that hope purchased in heaven when I get to talk to these guys that have been around up there. You know, it's going to be a fun day. And I'm so grateful to be a Christian. I don't have to fear God and being afraid, but I do definitely want to revere him and be in awe of him.
And I think we would both say, Joel, if you're listening to this podcast and you haven't made that decision to say yes to what Jesus has done for you, there is no better day than today. And it just begins with a yes, I believe, I trust. God, I need you. I know what Jesus did for me. He died for my sins. He rose from the dead. I want to accept that. It's that simple. And so I just want to thank you, Joel, for being on the podcast today. This was a fantastic conversation.
Thank you.
And I want to thank everybody for listening to the Search in Your City podcast. Next week, we've got our last episode of this Fear series. We're going to do a panel discussion. It is going to be really, really fun. And if you've enjoyed this podcast, I want to encourage you, subscribe to our feed, share this with your friends. And if you've got a thought, a comment, question, anything like that, send it to us, podcast@searchnational.org. And until next time, thanks for listening.